This is Alistair Coburn. You're listening to Agile Uprising Podcast.
Welcome to another Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, James Gifford, and we are live from the Heart of Agile Conference in Pittsburgh.
Tonight, which is actually a very beautiful city.
I was wildly, wildly surprised. Like, I thought this place would be a hellhole, and it is not.
According to Ryan Lockhart and the rest of the Uprising,
according to the board, like, this, I thought there was going to be, like, dumpster fires and, like, cars, like, rolled over and people just, like, busting out windows for food and provisions.
It's beautiful. I think it's beautiful.
The river's really pretty. Yeah.
So to let our listeners know, the Heart of Agile is a movement by Alistair Coburn, and he's trying to move us back away from what agility has become, the over-commercialization, the highly decorated agile of ceremonies, practices, and process, and try to get us back to the beginning. And it's great to be sitting here with Chris and Colleen, and they just delivered some really epic sessions.
Yeah, we did.
So we want to kind of give you guys a little preview into, like, what's going on here at the event from their eyes, and we hope you guys find this valuable, and maybe these are for the people out there that are organizing these conferences. Listen to, like, some of the different things that we're doing. We had it on a freaking boat. We're not at a hotel, so different venues are okay. So this may be a complete crapshoot, but let's see where this goes.
I completely agree. And, well, first off, I'm gonna get the butt kissing out of the way. I think you and Rob did. The fact that the two of you put this thing on by yourselves is nothing short of a miracle worthy of scripture. You guys did a great job of pulling this off. It doesn't feel like it's too stuffy or, like, overprepared. It just feels like just from the sponsors, like having the upper deck of the boats. Just for open conversation, there's a lot of, you kind of walk in between boats. There's several boats. Like, there's one that each of them have their, like, they're like the Duchess and the Princess and
the Queen.
Yes, of course the Queen. Well, the Queen of Kanban is here, so that's where she had to speak, was on the Queen. Yeah,
right.
She was actually the Empress of Kanban today.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes, I was only a Duchess.
You'll get there.
One of these days, I'm growing in the community. But you had to, like, walk in between. I was almost late to my own speaking session because I didn't know which boat was which, mm-hmm. and I was getting phone calls saying, like, where are you? Like, your session is starting.
Yeah, it's just, honestly, it's just nice to see the sky at a conference. Mm-hmm. Typically, you're in a hotel, you stay in the hotel, you go to your sessions in the hotel. Someone will be like, how was Pittsburgh? And you'll be like, is that where I was? I don't know. I saw the inside of a Marriott for 3 days. So it is a really beautiful setting, a beautiful city. And you guys have done an awesome job of putting this on. And it's awesome to meet a lot of people in varying stages of their Agile experience and their Agile careers. So I've had some great conversations today.
So how do you guys feel about the random, like, we have a different mix of topics for this conference. And the fact that we actually have a semi-structured open space environment with the collaborative conversation track, and then we're actually diving into experience reports and then tutorials. Like, do you think that that's a different mix than you actually see at other conferences? And is that something that's been pretty enticing about the event?
I think I've seen some dabbling with the experience reports being a mainstay at a lot of the big conferences, and I think they're awesome. Like, it's great to hear really practical approach or practical stories of how people have done different things with their companies. I like having the open space areas that you guys have provided that are still kind of focused. We're doing a full day of open space at Mile High Agile this year, and it requires a lot of setup in the morning, right? You have to do your marketplace of ideas and have everybody come and pitch stuff. And I think what you guys achieved with having the collaborative space on the schedule already, and with a focus already, is still providing the opportunity to have some pretty fluid and dynamic conversations, but targeted without all of that setup eating up part of the day. So I think it was a great approach.
Yeah, it's so, you know, every conference has the, you know, the quote unquote coach's corner, and they are, you know, they're kind of, depending on the conference, like there are, I mean, there, you might get one or two. I mean, I've been to some, you know, smaller conferences where you won't have anybody show up in the coach's corner all day. It's just people sitting there that could have been either leading a session or doing a session, but you want to, like, it's kind of like an understood thing. You got to do it. I feel like the collaborative conversations is more of a, you can kind of get some of the benefit of the coach's corner, but in a more guided, sense. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
But no, I mean, I totally agree. Like, and then the beauty of the, we tried to find stuff that we, most of the questions that we have in the structured conversation is actually based on the version one survey, which they don't really know, but they're here sponsoring. But we took a lot of the content that came out of the version one survey and the focus on, like, people being, it about being, like, it being more of a productivity thing instead of learning. And I know that Colleen focuses a lot on learning in a lot of her talks. She talked significantly about that during her session. So one of the things we tried to do was actually take that survey and turn it into questions that tried to bring the survey back to the Agile Manifesto. So you'll see that in that track. And that was one of the things that we thought was really important was, since we are trying to get back to the frickin' basics, like,
sure,
let's take a survey that is literally the, you know, basically the bedazzled survey of Agile and turn it into trying to get people to start thinking about what the actual values are.
You know, I think the important thing to you bring up the start. I mean, I helped you with those questions. So I kind of knew where your head was at. Hopefully we as a community can have a good sense of humor about things like the survey. I mean, we, you know, there's answers and there's questions and there's things that we, like, if we were doing it, we would do it our way, or we would put our kind of our thing in there. And so, you know, you could view it from the lens of, like, well, they didn't ask the question, they didn't give the options that they wanted to, like, why is there so much focus on scaling and metrics and, like, the success metrics, you know, of things like productivity instead of, like, you know, happy people or good balanced lives, kind of a thing. Like, you could have all those, you can have those discussions what you want, which is the whole point of the collaborative conversations. Like, I remember you telling me, James, that what you wanted was, like, let's view the survey for what it is. It's a set of information, but it's not the entire set of information. So let's use this as a starting point of our conversation in the community, as opposed to seeing it as, well, this is the definitive, like, this is the definitive story about what it says. I don't think version one ever intended it to be seen as that way, and I don't know if it really is. I don't know. How do you think that the survey is really viewed, Colleen?
Yeah, no, I think what you said is a great approach, not just with the survey. I mean, the survey is a starting point and it's information, right. and like you said, a lot of the surveys that we look at, you know, in any capacity, there's a finite set of answers to pick from, right? So,
right.
You're kind of constrained by how the survey is structured. But I think using it as a starting point for conversation and exploring the spaces that it covers is a really cool way to approach not just the conference, but the conversations and the industry itself.
That's awesome. So, I mean, we've had actually better mix of developers and actual, like, people, like scrum masters, coaches, product owners. Do you think that they're something in the format that helped drive more a different eclectic mix of people, like, than we have, that you normally see at, like, a global scrum gathering, which is predominantly people?
Yeah, you know, I talked about this a little bit in my talk today, but I think one of the things that that I'm personally seeing in the consulting space is that a lot of companies have some kind of Agile adoption underway in their engineering teams already, right? They're doing some Agile. They might not be doing textbook Agile. They might not be doing any of it well, but they're trying, right? They're trying to do Agile. And a lot of the focus right now is how do we make other parts of the business Agile so that it's all working together? And I think once you start to make engineering more Agile, the focus typically turns to the product department or the product organization and how to make them more agile. And so I think with all of these conferences, and I'm seeing this here at Heart of Agile, is that we're seeing a lot of people outside of engineering coming with kind of a fresh perspective and new eyes of what do I need to do to bring other parts of the business along so that we're all working together to be agile.
I think that the here's the unfortunate part about the technical side of Agile, right? Is that if you look at the majority of the methodologies and frameworks and such, like, I mean, yeah, you could view some of them in whichever way you want, but for the most part, like, XP is really the only thing that was developer focused or technically focused, good technical principles. And for the record, we should all be using XP principles in our teams every single day. I didn't, you know, in the last probably 2 years, my technical understanding and ability to connect with developers has grown, I think, grown tremendously, mainly because I became interested in what they did. So I think that getting back to the conference, like why more are coming, I think just like you have to give that an emphasis or it won't ever, like the switch won't ever flip. It'll always be a, like you said, a people kind of a thing. I think instead of calling them workshops, you called them tutorials. I think that has a more technical feel to them. I think that you just have to, by getting back to basics, like, I mean, one of the most basic things you do is have good development practices. So we're, you know, hearing people talk about pipelines and code coverages and that is not a separate piece from the human side of things, right? We can talk about the Spotify models and we can talk about scaling and we can talk about, you know, end-to-end Kanban or what happens when we try to move too fast. But if we don't weave in the technical pieces to it, well, then we're going to leave most of our organization behind, because regardless of how many people we have, most of our IT organizations are developers. So we have to, they felt like they've been, I mean, some of them probably feel like, I know I've worked at companies where they felt like they're at the kids table for forever. Like we can't treat them that way. They need to be in the front leading this stuff. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And, you know, it's been really interesting to see a completely packed house for a discussion on ping pong pair programming.
Right.
Literally.
Or a packed boat.
Well, a packed boat. But there were, you know, 60 people that showed up for that talk.
Right.
And I know, since I managed the attendee list, I know who the people were. And a lot of them were like Scrum Masters. So it was kind of refreshing to start to see like different, like the Scrum Masters actually coming to the session to get some education. We have a great session on open heart surgery on legacy code tomorrow, which I'm really excited about. So, you know, we've actually had more developer submissions as well as an overwhelming a number of submissions when we actually went through the process on the retrospective. We had more retrospective talks than we had anything else submitted to the conference, which was an interesting thing. But I know that each of you got to do some work around deliver. And if you get back to the Heart of Agile, Alistair's four simple principles is collaborate, deliver, reflect, and improve. Like, that is literally the basic cycles of that. And, you know, kind of how do you feel like your talk really helped promote the deliver track? Because you both were in the delivery track.
Well, I think what was really interesting that tied kind of Chris's talk and my talk together was the concept of speed of delivery and reducing the amount of work that you're doing, right? Whether it's trying to do more faster or doing more, right?
Well, work to talk about work, right? Like, it's kind of like meetings about meetings.
Right. So I think from the deliver concept, it's kind of changing the way that we're looking at our productivity. And I think that's a really hard thing. You know, I mentioned during my presentation, there's all these kind of quippy Kanban sayings like manage the work, not the people. But one of the ones that I love is that doing more does not equal that you get more done, right? And I think you were kind of getting at that, Chris, with a lot of what you talked about with speed. Like, having more work in progress doesn't mean you're going to get more across the finish line. It's just going to take longer to do it. And that's not faster delivery in the end. So I think it was cool to talk about some of those deliver concepts, like you talked about, from the core of the Heart of Agile principles in a little bit different way. So it wasn't just like, how do we deliver 80 more stories a sprint or 80 more story points a sprint? It was really getting back to, what does deliver more mean? What does deliver faster mean? And kind of the core concepts around delivery and how to be as productive as possible with that.
It does seem interesting that, though we never asked the question in our sessions, and I think the same thing from Jess's talk about the Kanban stand, or the Candy Land, Kaizen Land. Sorry, I got it wrong. Sorry, Jess. Kaizen Land, the stand-up game. It was K words that I was getting messed up on. There's been a lot of Japanese words thrown in today, and I got mine confused. With Jess's Kaizen Land talk, and then, you know, Nivea's right, like, behind that, like, this idea of, like, we're asking the question of, like, well, what, like, when we're, like, what do we think we're delivering, right? Like, what does it mean to deliver? And it's a meta, like, it's a very meta, it's one of those, like, you could stay up till 2 a.m. with liquor and vape pens, like, talking about all that all night long. But in the end, like,
we're describing the Agile Uprising board meeting.
But like in the end, like, for the record, that is not all of us at the board meetings. If we don't ask that question, like, what do we really get? Like, you know, Colleen, you forced your organization and your talk to, and not forced, but you kind of implicitly encouraged, like, you, what are you even deliver? Like, say you can, like, if you could knock out 100 points in iteration, or you could launch 5 epics a month, or, like, I think you said in your talk you did like 9 releases in a month, right?
We did 90 deployments to production in
90,
a month.
90?
Yeah.
I skipped a zero off of that.
But that was after going through, I mean, we had switched to Kanban, but we're still running a release train, and we were doing 6 weeks of development and 6 weeks of hardening. So our 12-week release train was only 50% development effort. And took 12 weeks to get out. So for us to go from that to doing 90 deployments in 1 month was a huge win. Although, as soon as we did that, the rest of the organization was like, holy shit, slow down.
So I was very blessed to be a part of a company for several years that did know how to deliver quickly. And often the clients that we would consult for, the delivery gigs that we would sign, they would all say the same thing, like, we don't know how to keep up with you. Like, we're having trouble keeping up with you. And so, like, all these people that want Agile and they say faster, 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 let's be more productive. Even going back to the version one survey, like, productivity being like way up there in terms of value, like, well, what does that give us if we're not, I mean, if you follow like the 80-20 rule and, you know, 80% of the crap's not going to be used, right?
Right, and we talked about that a lot in some
Pareto
of those.
Principle.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot in some of the sessions today around just that concept of understanding what your customers want, and that you know that you're delivering something that they're going to use, and delivering more faster if it's not the right thing doesn't matter at the end of the day, right? I can deploy features as quickly as possible, but if you're not going to use them, who cares?
Yeah, well, at the end of your talk, I've seen you give, you talked about lean experimentation with the Kanban board, and I know you've given a full talk on just that one subject before. We don't look at, we're not asking the questions of, are we measuring the right things? Like, how do we know, like, are we measuring our product the right way? Are we measuring our users the right way? Are we even talking to them at all, you know, for some of our clients? Like, How are we figuring out what to do other than, you know, what the next VP wants funded, kind of a thing, you know? So, like, if we're not answering that question, like, we'll never get to the part of it.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of interesting to see that, like, when we talk about collaborate, like, we don't talk about one of the things that never came up in any of the talks that were submitted was actually talking about business outcomes. An actual focus on outcomes that can be solutioned by an actual set of developers. And, you know, Colleen, you talk a lot about lean ideation in, like, a number of talks that I've actually been able to sit down and actually go through. Like, it comes back to, like, how are we missing? Like, why does this business value conversation, like, just get so overlooked? Like, and there aren't more conferences in our space. Like, you have Mind the Product, you have this, that are actually talking about product, but we actually miss out on those business outcomes.
Yeah, I feel like this is a great opportunity to plug both our podcast from at the Agile Uprising with the interview we did with Jeff Gotthelf on his new book, Sense and Respond, and just the work that he's been doing in that space, and his talk around, you know, exactly what we're saying. You can deliver faster, and you can measure velocity and output and cycle time and throughput and all these things, but if you're delivering the wrong things, who cares how fast you're doing it? So focusing on those outcomes is critical to a business being successful. And understanding what your customers want before you start writing user stories is really where that all comes together. And I think that conversation with him was amazing. If you haven't listened to that podcast, do it. His book is incredible. But that concept of outcome first, I think, is a huge shift in a way a business thinks about prioritizing their work too. So it becomes less about that more and speed first, and more about what's the thing that a customer is wanting and will use immediately, and that's going to bring them the most value.
I think that, well, but that's probably the next, I mean, that's probably the main problem, is that we as coaches get brought in to say, well, I already know what I want to build. I just need you to help me build it faster and better. But don't ask me whether it's the right thing, because I know it's the right thing. At least often that's where I come in, right? Because so-and-so has, well, we've got a product group, but we're building this thing, and I need a coach to help us make that kind of amazing kind of a thing. Like, how do we make them take a step back and go, before we talk about how I'm going to make this, right? Let's talk about, instead of talking about how we're going to do this, like, Mr. VP or Miss or Ms. COO or CEO kind of a thing. Like, wow, no, why are we building this?
I share this story a lot, and I feel very lucky that I worked for an organization that was comfortable with me sharing this story. There's an amazing book by the Heath brothers called Switch. And in Switch, they talk about finding the bright spot, right? Find something amazing. Find your bright spot story that you can repeat and share. And while that is an amazing model, and I love it, one of the things that helped me a ton was kind of finding the dark spot, so going the opposite route. So I had been prepping a presentation around how to incorporate lean startup principles, had the CEO of our company watching and listening, and he said, why don't you share our big failure as part of your presentation? And I said, I would be happy to if you were okay with that. And he said, yeah, people need to learn from our mistakes. And so for us, this was an 18-month product to deploy a feature that had a lot of flash that had to be reworked. And basically by the time we got it out,
dating ourselves here,
it was like crickets, right? There and nobody was using it. And when we went out and reached out to all the users to say, hey, you asked us for this thing, why aren't you using it? They were like, that's not what we meant. That is not what we meant when we were, you know, we're asking for this thing. And so it became kind of our calling card of let's not repeat that. Let's not repeat that project. Let's not repeat that mistake. Because in addition to being a huge time suck and a huge money drain, right? There's a huge morale issue with having a bunch of brilliant people crank out all this time on a feature and then deploy it and then have no one use it. right? You want to work on cool shit. That's why you're an engineer.
Exactly.
So I think that I tell this story frequently now because I think it became kind of our way to say, let's invest the money up front and make sure that we know what we're doing, that we're developing the right thing, and we can talk to customers along the way. But, right. But when we hit the deploy button, that they're going to be excited, and we know they're going to be excited. We're not pushing that button and hoping.
You know, there's an old axiom that like ideas are cheap, kind of a thing, and that's true. Like ideas are cheap. Like you can sit in a room and you can throw stickies on the wall, and you can have executive sessions, and you can do all these things. But like, if you're not, like what you said is really interesting. Almost because you said put a little bit more in up front to validate that which could sound, I'm not saying it does, it could sound waterfall-y to be like, well, let's put some time in up front to validate this thing. But that doesn't mean like everything comes to a halt while you're doing this. Like, again, that goes back to your lean experimentation, like smaller experiments, better questions, better metrics to help fuel the new work, right? And I'm plugging your stocks that you didn't even give here. I'm plugging that you gave at other sessions.
It's a series. It will be in my future.
I'm a giant Colleen fan. That's everybody. If you see Colleen on the docket of your conference, you have to go. She'll be at Mile High. If you're going to Mile High, you should definitely. Oh, you're not. Oh, you're
not.
Not
speaking. Damn,
I forgot. Damn.
Way to go, Chris.
I know.
So in the interest of time, and I really enjoy chatting with you guys, but we do have to make sure that Colleen gets to the airport, and so we need to respect her time box. So I know we're cutting this short, and we could probably talk for hours, and we say that all the time. So guys, how can we find you if the community wants to find you and hook up and talk about some of the things that we've talked about? How can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Scrumhive, like a beehive. And I work for ImagineX Consulting, so you can ping me at ImagineX. I'm also the founder of Scatterspoke, a tool for better team retrospectives based on data, data and history.
Don't ever do that again.
So check out scatterspoke.com.
And I am, if you Google me, you'll find all my things, Chris Merman, M-U-R-M-A-N. You can put those two words together and find me on Twitter. You can put .com after it and find my, amazing blog where I write about.
It is amazing.
I'm pretty awesome. Let me just say, if one of those two places, I'll find you. The most important thing our community can do is talk more. So we need to talk more. So reach out to me and let's talk.
And you can find me on Twitter at Scramando. You can find me online at my infrequently blogged blog at Scramando.com or Scramando.com. And you can always find me on the Coalition site typing extremely bad, poor worded things.
We call that a decoration blog.
So we thank you for tuning in to whatever mayhem that has just ensued. And if you really want to join the coalition, find us at coalition.agileuprising.com. Thanks from beautiful downtown Pittsburgh on the Gateway Clipper Fleet.
Let's go sailing.